Thank you for joining with us for another episode of Morning Briefings here on the Pipeline Intercession for the President and on our podcast. If you have any dreams that you have about the Office of the President, please send them to pip@christiancenterstreetport.com. We're so thankful that you all have joined in with us on this prayer journey, and we look forward to standing with you not only today, but in the days ahead. So with that, we'll go ahead and join today's broadcast as we talk about the news and stand on the wall for this nation and the Office of the President.
Good morning, everyone. Zach R. Scadden coming to you live from Shreveport, Louisiana. And today we have a lot to catch up on as last night some primaries finally came through and we're seeing the results pour in this morning as some are still coming through and we're seeing where the results lie in a lot of these races. And I think this outlines what the battle ahead will look like, and so we want to make sure we understand. We'll look at some things a little bit to understand what this means going into the midterm elections in the fall, and then also some other news and to stay up to date on as well. Well, with that, I want to again start off in scripture. And as we title today, are we like the prudent virgins? And our prayer point comes from the study of Matthew 25. And I want to go through a little bit of this, just that first portion of that first paragraph, and making sure that we are looking at this. And as we continue our study of the midnight hour right now, and taking back the night watches, and so that we can be prepared, release our anxieties, and be in that alignment with the Lord, we see in this parable, we'll start with, I want to read through this whole parable. I think it's very, very enlightening and can help us understand, even with everything that's going on in the world, how to walk this out little by little. And so we see here, it says, then the kingdom of heaven will be comparable to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Five of them were foolish, five were prudent. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the prudent took oil in flasks along with their lamps. Now, while the bridegroom was delaying, they all got drowsy and began to sleep. And I think that's very important, is sometimes we can all get drowsy and fall asleep. And sometimes as things get delayed, we all succumb to drowsiness and sleepiness and get lost in everything. But it's, are we prepared beforehand with the Lord and being wise in what he's resourced us with? But at midnight, there was a shout, behold, the bridegroom, come out to meet him. Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the prudent, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the prudent answered, no, there will not be enough for us too. Go instead to the dealer and buy some for yourselves. And while they were going away to make the purchase, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding feast. And the door was shut. And to close out, later the other virgins also came, saying, Lord, Lord, open up for us. But he answered, truly I say to you, I do not know you. Be on the alert then, for you do not know the day nor the hour. And that's very key as we walk this out of standing here praying for the office of the president. Are we being prudent or are we being like the foolish virgins? And Chuck points out through this study of the midnight hour that as we continue to look at these scriptural examples of even at midnight in verse 6, a cry. He says to ask the Lord to be sure you are trimming your wick and keeping your supply of oil ready for his visitation. And then also to ask the Lord to remove all foolishness from you so that we can be like the prudent and wise virgins, making sure we're prepared and ready for when the bridegroom bridegroom comes, because sometimes he may be delayed. He's not going to come on time when we think it come. As we see here through scripture that Jesus is telling us, you do not know the day nor the hour. And so when people make these predictions and it doesn't happen and things get delayed, maybe there was a date, but then things happen and things get delayed. And so be prepared, be in season, and disciple, ask the Lord to remove what foolishness we have. Because look, even all got drowsy and all fell asleep. I think that's very key. We can all be very easily given into a slumber as things go on in a delay season. So with that, let's jump into the news. Have a few things to cover. Obviously, we want to start with what is happening in the issue in Ukraine and Russia. So there's been some more reports out of Ukraine that supposedly several more Russian generals, I don't know how many supposed generals can be killed. Obviously with somebody dying, they just appoint a new general, but it's just very interesting that quote unquote generals keep dying. And then you also see the intensifying of investigations towards investigating war crimes against Russian soldiers. I just got a notification from Wall Street Journal right before we went live that a Russian soldier admitted to killing unarmed innocent civilians in Ukraine. So we're starting to see some of the truth of what has come out or what has been happening in Ukraine. We're seeing a confirmation of what has happened, unfortunately, for the people of Ukraine. And I think one thing we really need to pray about is McConnell is now coming out and supposedly urging the Biden administration on Tuesday to lead to ensure broad, sustained international support for Ukraine, and said Washington should remain a reliable supplier of advanced weaponry for the besieged country. Now, we really pray for the Biden administration, because we have to ask ourselves, is what McConnell is asking for the right decision? Is continuing to fund Ukraine the right decision for us, number one, as a nation? But what is the Lord saying in this issue? I mean, let's go back to when Obama was in office, and was it the right decision to ask Ukraine to remove its nuclear weapons, which was the deterrent for Russia not going into Ukraine? And now you're seeing the consequences of that play out. And so just because a politician proposes something doesn't necessarily mean it's the best idea, because there's always unintended consequences that arise from a lot of these decisions that arise that they don't fully think out. And even when they think about it, it's the question is they when they think about it, do they really fully understand how the Ukrainians and the Russians operate? Will Russia do something to get around it? So that's something we need to continue to pray for this administration on. And then also, I think this one's really interesting. This is set to block Russian debt payments of Russia using its U.S. assets and U.S. dollars to be able to pay its debt. And Russia's talked about how if they're not able to use the money they have in America in denominated in dollars, that they're going to pay in Russian rubles. And there's rise of default. Now, this is not 100% confirmed, but this is more than likely the way this administration is leaning towards. And Janet Yellen did come out and say, and I think this is somewhat wise, of saying, look, we want to, let me make sure I have her. She said, there is something, this is that we are actively examining right now. She says, we want to make sure that we understand what the potential consequences and spillovers would be of allowing the license to expire, which is the license that gives a carve out for allowing the Russian government to be able to use its assets that it has here in America to be able to pay for its debts. The issue isn't that Russia can't afford to pay it, because with the money they're making on oil and gas sales, they're doing very well. It's just what monies are they going to use? Is it going to be the dollars they have here in America, or is it going to be rubles that they're going to have to somehow transfer through Sweden in some form of way? The issue is not about whether they can pay it. The issue is how they're going to pay it and whether it's going to be easy or not, which could trigger a default. And then the question becomes is, okay, who are the recipients of and who owns this Russian debt? Is it the U.S. government? Is it investors? How much of the market does this affect? And in times of inflation, can cause the market to continue to shake and rumble, especially in the energy sector, which is interesting as the Biden administration continues to handle that. And then speaking of the energy sector, we see that now Jake Sullivan and the administration are in communications with both Saudi Arabia and the UAE to build back a better relationship in hopes that Saudi Arabia and UAE will somehow magically just be able to produce oil, more oil, because they ask. Industry experts and people in UAE and Saudi Arabia are like, look, if you're not going to invest in this long term, then we can't produce what you're asking for. And that's what Americans have been saying, of look, if you're not going to allow oil and gas lease sales for people to explore, because it's not always, hey, let me stick a pipe straw in the ground and oil pops up. It's not the Beverly Hillbillies. You don't shoot and then it just pops up. You have to search for it. And then you have to see, okay, is this, how much is going to be here? And all, there's a whole caveat thing that I don't fully understand. But from what I do understand is it's not just that easy. It's going to take time, takes months. And what we're finding with in the offshore drilling is it may take years to be able to find the oil, be able to drill it, and then get it out and all the logistics behind it. And so the decisions, we talked about earlier this week, the decisions that this administration is making is very alarming for the future. But then also, okay, why are we being so dependent upon others when previous administration showed we can be energy independent and an energy exporter, not an importer? So we want to pray for wisdom there on this issue, because this is affecting not just Americans. This is affecting everyone around the world as energy prices continue to rise, and the supply is there. It's just whether we're going to go get it and bring it to market. So that's something we want to continue on. And then now, been paying attention. I think everybody's been paying attention to this story of Elon Musk in its valuation of Twitter and his ask of wanting to know how many users are actual bots and how many users are actual people. And what's interesting to come out is that the New York Post is reporting this, is that nearly half of sitting President Joe Biden's Twitter followers are fake. And of his nearly 22.2 million followers, half of them, through an audit, are fake. That's quite interesting. Not only for the Twitter font, but for some other reasons. I think you all fully understand that. And then there are people who are speculating, and Twitter, and this is a very interesting perspective to look at. If Elon Musk is going to buy Twitter at $44 billion, excuse me, and you're now saying that there is more or less than, you can't answer that question of how many are actual real people and real users, or if it's just one person who has a million accounts or 10 million accounts or however it may be. How do you know if the valuation of the company is actually accurate? And from a financial perspective, Elon Musk is being very wise in saying, hey, you need to have this answer. And it's exposing a lot of things about Twitter. And then if you've seen the recent Project Veritas videos that have come out from several, not just one, several Twitter execs, even after Twitter sent out an email, a memo basically, to executives, employees of Twitter saying, hey, watch out for people trying to befriend you, go out on dates with you, might be Project Veritas. And The recent one that came out last night was the guy literally saying, showing somebody that email and that person being somebody who works for Project Veritas. I mean, that is ultimately hilarious, ultimate troll job. And what's interesting is Elon Musk is seeing this. It's adding into speculation, and it's exposing all this stuff that's happening. Knowing that they don't really care for free. And even as Jack Dorsey's former news stories and things happening and occurring, is Facebook? Does this affect Instagram? Does this affect all these new platforms that are coming out? Because I know on LinkedIn it's also the bots are a huge thing there. So we're seeing this exposing on Twitter show that and ask a question of where else is this occurring? And I think this is good for Elon to dive in and hopefully get an answer. I mean, people can see because, you know, there's a lot of backlash and, well, Twitter says this and Twitter says it's the Twitter mob of this. Well, is it really Twitter? Is it really people? Is it just bots? And that's a huge key question there. And on another good note is there is now a bill that Republicans are trying to put forward is called the Prohibiting Abortion Industry's Lucrative Loopholes Act, where they're trying to prohibit payments, reimbursement, gifts, or compensation of fetal tissues by closing the valuable consideration loophole in its current law and punishing violators with fines or up to 10 years in prison. This is being introduced to the House floor by Florida Representative Scott Franklin. I think this is a major, major potential victory. I mean, why would abortionists be able to make money? Is it just preposterous and appalling, and showing that there's more to it than just the woman's right to choose that they're arguing about? It's the spirit of mammon money that they're being able to grift off of through all of this. So this is actually a good bill. Hopefully it can go forward, and you can see where both those on the right and the left stand on such an issue as payment of body parts of innocent children. And it's just sad to see that even happens. And I want to look at the results in a few states from the primaries last night. I want to make sure I have everything up. Okay. So as we're seeing now, the races, especially in the GOP, Republican primaries in Pennsylvania are still up in contention. They haven't had the full results. And most likely going to have to do a recount, as we see here the top two candidates, Mehmet Oz and David Cormick, are neck and neck within less than 3,000, closer to 2,000 votes. But also, let's understand this, is while we're, you know, people are arguing over this and Kathy Barnett, look, is Pennsylvania has recently a more blue-leaning state, a Democrat-leaning state. So whoever wins is going to have their hands full. And the way they attacked each other in the primary is that going to be beneficial? Or are the Democrats going to be able to just say, hey, yeah, cool, just bring up the same thing, and they don't have to argue anything else? They've let those within the GOP and Republican primaries do their research and work for them. And you're seeing this along in other areas throughout the state, of showing, look, Pennsylvania is still kind of who it is. Even in who won the U.S. Senate side for the Democrats and an extreme progressive, John Fetterman, open about his stance for the murder of innocent babies, open about his stance of just degrading the primary founding principles of this nation, and I'll get into that here in a second, because he's not the only one, not only in Pennsylvania but around the country, of more of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party to have won some primaries. Then we go in to North Carolina yesterday, as you saw Ted Budd win by majority there. Cheryl Beasley on the Democratic side, and then you also saw Madison Cawthorn fall out. And I think just it became too much, the evidence for everyone there, the mental makeup, the bombastic attitude that he had towards things, and really not getting anything done. And that's very, very unfortunate, because he had a promising hope. It looked like a promising chance to do something. And unfortunately, because of lack of integrity, he got called out for it. And so we're seeing there now the ground being set there. This will be a very close race come the midterms. These will be very, very tightly run. North Carolina is a swing state. It is a purple state. It is up in the air. And you have had a lot of people move in, myself included, and some people move out. So really where things lie will be determined. And then can you get everybody to join in on the Republican side and or the Democratic side? Will they continue to vote? Will some pull? Will some not to either other side? We will see. And that's going to be very key moving forward in towards the midterm election. Now let's go to Kentucky. Kentucky is heavily red recently in most of your races. Rand Paul won by a very, very large margin. Democratic opponent Charles Booker had like 115,000 less. And so it's going to be about turnout. Could possibly be closer than we think, but Rand Paul most likely will end up winning there as well. And then in other races, a lot of them went uncontested in the primaries. And now we see Idaho. Again, they lean right. They continue to stay right. Mike Crapo, who you see here for the U.S. Idaho Senate race, 172,000 votes versus the leading candidate for the Democratic side of 18,000 votes. So that tells you a little bit there. They'll also have a governor's race and lieutenant governor's race. So you'll see that come out to play in November. And then lastly, the last state, Oregon. They lean left, they lean blue, and blue is dominating here, as you see the leading candidate for the Republican side with 78,000 votes, and the candidate for the Democratic side had upwards of 100. It went away for some reason, I don't know why. But it had multiples more. So with that being said, I want to point that out to see, okay, these are where the numbers lie. Now people, you understand who the candidates are. You understand how to vote. Be very clear. Obviously, with Pennsylvania, things still up in the air. And one thing I want to point out is that we're talking about this red wave, red wave, red wave. Everybody's saying this. But look, there are small victories now for the progressives, those who want socialism, communism, anti-biblical values to come in. Some of them are on different spectrums. They're starting to win races as well, primaries as well. Smaller races, their candidates are being put forward, which is alarming, because now that tells you where in places like Pennsylvania, even in, I'm trying to see where else. In other, Oregon, etc., that we saw yesterday, where you're starting to see these progressives start to win some of these primary elections, meaning that they're going to be there as popular candidates come, not just in U.S. Senate races, in smaller races, in local races. And this is why local elections matter. And understanding this in terms will really matter. And so we really need to be aware of this as we head into the full midterms. And then yesterday we saw, and I'll close out on this, yesterday we saw the president go to Buffalo and talk about gun control and push for more gun control, etc. And interesting is also Joe Manchin again is being the cog in the machine to slow things down. While Chuck Schumer is asking for more legislation, deeper background checks, gun, what he's calling war weapons of war being taken off the streets. Joe Manchin is saying, no, we don't want to do that. He's going back to a bill that he proposed in 2013 called the Manchin-Toomey bill, which is basically it's trying to give a deeper background check. And what Manchin believes is that it's something that doesn't invade on the rights of private citizens, private information. Some people disagree. It failed to pass the vote, and looks like, from all things considered now, it will most likely fail because you're going to have 60 votes to pass to get it out of the Senate, and it doesn't look like it has that. But again, Joe Manchin's being a cog in the machine, and so this is going to be an interesting point as we head towards the midterms of seeing where candidates lie on the Second Amendment. And there are a lot of candidates out there who say they're Second Amendment, but when you look at their record and things they said publicly, the roots of that do not go deep, of them saying that they actually do that. And then lastly, I want to close out on this victory, is in New Jersey, a state senator has introduced a parents' right bill. Similar to what Florida put in place, is a New Jersey state senator, Edward Durr, introduced it. Basically, K through 12th grade, to give parents the right to decide if they want their child to be involved in these outlandish teachings from teachers, and to prevent teachers from doing this stuff in private. And so I think this is a major victory as we're seeing this rise up, and this could be part of, I mean, to me, this is part of what the midterms will be about, is parental rights, the education system, making sure our children are not being taught just random ideologies that have nothing to do with whether they can read, write, or do arithmetic. And then being involved in that, of being wise enough, like Florida has been, of understanding that they try to intertwine it within reading, writing, and arithmetic. And look, just teach math. That reading, writing, and arithmetic. Don't try to intertwine all this stuff. It's all parents are asking. It's that simple. Just teach it. And nobody's saying you need to live a certain life and do things a certain way. Although I believe the Bible clearly lays that out for us, but we're not here for that. We're a nation of freedoms. And we would hope and pray that the Lord would convict him to live a life of integrity and holiness. But on this issue, it's hey, however you live, that's fine. But teach my kid how to read, write, and do arithmetic is all parents are asking. And so we're seeing great victories of this around the country. And I apologize for my internet today cutting in and out. I was realizing that. And so I'll, again, put up the podcast. You're going to go back and listen to it. I'll put the prayer notes there and the links for those who watched live, and I'll try to find a better internet connection later tomorrow, so that doesn't happen again. But thanks for following along, staying with me here all the way through, and hopefully you were able to pick up most of that. And I'll be back tomorrow. And today we have our noon prayer, appeal to heaven, with our Olive students, praying for this nation and the Father's heart for this nation. And also tonight we have our healing and deliverance service. Tonight we're going to do more of a watch, continuing to pray for the Supreme Court justices and some things that are happening in this nation as we gear up towards an ever contentious summer, to say the least, and praying for this administration and guiding us through this season that we are in, and hopefully praying that the Lord would bring the Holy Spirit and conviction and fear of the Lord into the White House, legislator's office, to lead us in the direction that the Lord would want. So blessings, and I will see you guys